Coming down the aisle at a combined weight of 436 pounds, the team of Jeffrey Martin, Brian Berga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
You are listening to the High Spot Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. Also follow, subscribe on iTunes and all social media outlets. And also follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast and all our social media platforms, Instagram and Facebook page and Snapchat. Also, our brand new spanking website, highspotpodcast.com. I am Jeff Martin alongside the trendsetter. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew here to recap the world of professional wrestling for you guys. Amazing show. We got Miranda Salinas coming up. She is a competitor in the Mae Young Classic. She's going to tell her story and what exactly it was like to compete in the Mae Young Classic. And, of course, we all know who came out of that. Kairi Sane was the winner. But still, going to hear stories and the reaction of Miranda Salinas and just what it was like to be in the Mae Young Classic. Trendsetter, how are you, man?
I'm doing good, man. Excited to get Miranda on the show, gracing us with her time. Again, something that I wanted to emphasize here is that it was great to have her on. You listen to the interview in terms of what she had to deal with leading up to the tournament. But more than that, just to see what a great time right now for women's wrestling that, you know, although, you know, Miranda had an early exit in the tournament, this is just a great platform, not necessarily for all the competitors that were in the tournament, but for everybody out there right now, because you look at any independent promotion out there, they're going to want to elevate their women's division. And so it just gives more opportunities for young women out there to start competing in the wrestling ring.
Yeah, so we can't wait to hear from her. A quick shout out to B Plus Player Radio Network, Mark Adam Haggerty, thank you so much. And also our debut on the Fans Podcast, the High Spot Podcast has made it onto that network. So looking forward to that. But man, we got to start again on another somber note. First and foremost, our thoughts and prayers go out to everyone in Las Vegas. Just a cruel and senseless act of violence once again perpetrated by one certain individual, and everyone in everyone that was there, you know, pays the price, and it's rather unfortunate. And again, thoughts and prayer from the High Spot Podcast to the city of Las Vegas, some place I've always wanted to visit, a place that I know if I go, I'm going to get addicted to. So, just our thoughts and prayers goes out to them.
Yeah, I couldn't say any better than when Jeff just mentioned it. Right now, at the time, too, you know, everybody's going to have their own opinion on how they want to view this, how they want to talk about it. But ultimately, if you just kind of pay our respects to those unfortunate that have lost their lives in, like Jeff mentioned, senseless acts out there. And it's a dangerous world out there. But at the same time, we have to move forward. And like I said, all our thoughts and prayers go out to the unfortunate victims of that type of scenario. And there's no smooth transition in any of this, Jeff, but at the same time, it's as good. I wouldn't say it's good, but in moments like this, you tend to reflect on, you know, sometimes we tend to complain of, you know, we're too tired, or I don't like going to work, or for the mere fact that, you know, we're not where we thought we'd be, et cetera, et cetera. It's just great right now to kind of reflect and just be thankful, one, we're alive and we have the ability of doing things that we want to do.
Exactly. So if you feel like you're down and realize that there's people with bigger problems, people have lost their lives in Las Vegas. So again, just something that we shake our head at and we just wish it just would stop. But, you know, it is the reality of our world today. But listen, if there's anything we can tell you guys is, please, you know, never leave the house without saying I love you to that loved one. And, you know, never think that there's tomorrow because it's not guaranteed.
And stop hating. Just love each other, basically. Yeah. That's my message.
And again, you know, not only do we have tragic news there, but also some sadness too, man. We lost so many people. You know, Hugh Hefner, we've lost Tom Petty, which was kind of, you know, stunned me a little bit. Now, I don't go as far back as to some of his music, but I do know Free Fallin' from Jerry Maguire. You know,
yeah, we know of classic. Tom Petty, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
exactly.
And we're novice at best in terms of Tom Petty. But again, what a huge rock and roll icon and star there too. And again, like usually these weird things happen. It was Hugh Hefner. And then unfortunately these things happen in threes and it just continues to snowball, unfortunately. But you know, very somber note, a lot of passing of some great individuals. And there's nothing more you could say, like you have mentioned, Jeff, when you opened up talking about the people in Las Vegas. Legends, that's it.
Yeah. And then, of course, in the wrestling world, stricken by the loss of the voice of Memphis professional wrestling, Lance Russell, gone at the age of 91. Listen, you know, I can't go far back to then because, again, it's back in the 80s and now we have outlets to everything. So I am familiar with Lance Russell. But if you go back in the 80s and the 70s, again, very, you remember the you know, Jerry Lawler and the Andy Kaufman scenario, and he played an integral, you know, part of it. It was kind of like the voice of that, narrated so much. And of course, you know, guys like Jerry Lawler said, you know, without him, there's no me. So if you, you know, if your childhood voice is Jim Ross, then people in Memphis and in the South, in the Mid-South, is going to be Lance Russell. And from all indications, was a heck of a guy, great guy, very accessible. And, you know, we lost another legend in the wrestling business, you know, Bobby Heenan, and now we lose Lance Russell. Just a sad time in the wrestling world, but we reflect on the good times, we reflect on what he meant for the business. It's just amazing.
It's amazing, Jeff, but in retrospect here, although they will be missed, they will never be forgotten.
Of course, no, they will never be forgotten, and, you know, legends live on forever, so that's what Lance Russell was in the world of professional wrestling. You know, we want to thank Shane Strickland for actually this week's show. We had a special, you know, edition of the High Spot podcast. He joined us talking about his match with Ricochet. So we're going to enjoy recapping that also in the next episode. But, you know, just amazing. And now we move on to Hell in a Cell because it is upon us. And you look at this pay-per-view. I don't know if it's as exciting as No Mercy, but you got to admit the Kevin Owens, Shane McMahon feud, just by what we saw at the end of SmackDown, seems to be like it's the match to watch. Your thoughts?
I would agree with that. I think when you look at the storyline and how Kevin Owens has invested himself as being theoretically, you know, pun intended, I guess, the face of SmackDown right now, because he's getting all the mainstream media. He's going up against the McMahons, in this case, Shane McMahon and Hell in a Cell. The storyline has just been so integral in terms of, in my opinion, saving this pay-per-view, because the audience wants to see this. They're excited about it. I didn't think we'd ever see Shane McMahon in a ring again. I don't know how much more he's going to keep doing this, because at the same time, I'm not taking anything away from Shane McMahon, but the great outing he had with AJ Styles at WrestleMania, the match he had at WrestleMania 32 against The Undertaker was incredible. You're wondering how he's going to top that, basically. I'm starting to be a little concerned too, because we had talked about the depth of this roster. And I mean, if Shane McMahon is headlining your SmackDown Live pay-per-view in Hell in a Cell, there's something going on here where, you know, a lot of it should be on the championship, the WWE Championship, we'll get into in a little bit. But right now, this match has the ability, obviously, to steal the show, but to me is the focal point of what's going to save this pay-per-view. If it fails and it ceases to live up to expectations, then it's going to be a crapshoot of a pay-per-view, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, of course, we know that AJ Styles is going to defend the U.S. title. We know that Nakamura and Jinder Mahal, we'll definitely get into that when we do our predictions and recap No Mercy.
Yeah. But,
I mean, it's all about Shane and Kevin Owens. You know, it's the performance they're both given, and Kevin Owens has just been out of his, well, I guess out of his mind, and out of, you know, and just out of sight with all these promos.
Out of his freaking mind.
Out of his freaking mind, too, right?
So I guess some of the best promos I've heard Kevin of Kevin Owens, though.
Give Kevin Owens props, because, you know, this is like Sami Zayn said, this is a different Kevin Owens. This is not the, you know, the funny kind of heel where he was with Jericho and the Festival of Friendship.
Outlandish, comedic type of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, this is a different Kevin Owens, different side. So this is a mean side that only maybe Sami Zayn has seen before in a while. So interesting note about Sami Zayn. The factor that me and you were talking about before was the possibility of Sami Zayn turning heel. Now, listen, Sami Zayn is stuck in, I guess, limbo right now with his character.
Purgatory.
There is no more that he could further advance. It doesn't seem like that, even though he is the underdog and the fan favorite. It just doesn't seem like they want to elevate him. Would a heel turn in this case helping him at Hell in a Cell? If, say, for example, he opens the cage for Kevin Owens or he closes the door on Shane McMahon, do you think that's something that would work to the advantage of turning Sami Zayn heel?
Yeah, with that being said, Jeff, it makes sense. Now, I don't want to be like everybody that generally thinks they can book properly, but it does kind of make sense. You mentioned how Sami Zayn's in kind of in wrestling purgatory. Really, there's nothing that they can do with him. He's been in storylines that have been short-lived. He's been on the losing streak. He's been on winning streaks. And it's basically been the fact that he's wanted opportunities for himself. And he hasn't gotten them on either the roster. He hasn't gotten them on Raw. He hasn't gotten opportunities on SmackDown Live. And even the opportunities he's gotten, he's failed at. So maybe this is a different dynamic, because although I think Kevin
Owens...
Did
he really fail? Could you say he really failed? Or was it more creative letting him down?
Well, no, if you look at terms of storyline, he failed because he didn't live didn't get the win that he needed. But, you know, creative-wise, yeah, I mean, it's very easy to point the finger at creative, Jeff, and say, oh, they're missing the ball. You know, what are they doing with Sami Zayn? What are they doing with Shinsuke Nakamura? What are they doing with AJ Styles? You know, pick somebody, and I'm sure you can find a complaint about it. If, you know, they should be doing something with this individual. But it's an interesting dynamic here because, you know, as much as I want to see Kevin Owens now go this new route, this new Kevin Owens that we're seeing is very sadistic, methodical, very vicious type of Kevin Owens that we haven't seen before, which is why this rivalry is so personal and people are invested in it. Maybe a combination of the two, of seeing a different side of Sami Zayn that we haven't seen before, might help out. I don't know if the two are going to pair together because that would be pretty interesting for the fact that we've seen Jericho and Kevin Owens, but ever since the debut of both Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn on the same roster, whether it be NXT, moving on to Raw and SmackDown as well, this rivalry has always been them butting heads. We've never seen them as a team.
That's why I would think it works. That's why I think it works. Even if Kevin Owens goes off on his own, just the fact of it having it help Sami Zayn turn heel, saying, hey, you haven't noticed me. I tried to give you advice and didn't notice me. So I think it would
work.
And
it's out there too because he's been talking to Shane McMahon, trying to talk some sense into him leading up to this Hell in a Cell match. And maybe finally it's the final straw basically. He's just fed up with everybody ignoring him. And like I said, he takes that out on the fact that he's going to cost Shane McMahon the match against Kevin Owens. Because right now, when you really look at it, if Kevin Owens were to lose this, that's losing a lot of momentum for one of your major stars because Shane McMahon's not going to get in the ring every single night.
Yeah, another match that I'm looking forward to, and I think we're talking about just, you know, Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens. It's got to be Hell in a Cell with the New Day and the Usos. It's going to be 2-on-2. You're not going to have all three members of New Day in the Hell in a Cell match itself. So, you know, it's going to be curious to see who exactly New Day is going to choose to represent the team against the Usos. Listen, they've been having great matches ever since SummerSlam. They click, they mesh. It's something that it's like gold every time they get in the ring. Your thoughts on this matchup here? I really believe that they're going to put on a classic. And yes, we talked about Shane and Kevin Owens, but this one also too is another match that I'm looking forward to, that if I had to actually sit there on a Sunday and watch it, this would be one match that I can't wait till it comes on.
What this does is it basically brings the focus, Jeff, back to tag team wrestling. And that's something that I've always been a fan of. I know I kind of preach it to an extent, but I just feel that when you go to tag team wrestling, that's where you find the new stars that are going to take the echelons once, you know certain stars move aside, if they ever do. It's exciting because they've delivered every single time. They've made it their own type of personal storyline between the beefs between both teams. And the thing is, it's really focusing the spotlight on the main thing. Although we love the New Day and we love the Usos and this new attitude they have, the main focal point in this entire storyline is one thing: the SmackDown Live tag team titles. And that's what I think in anything, whether it be a tag team match, whether it be for the United States title, whether it be for the Intercontinental Championship, WWE, name one, it should always be about that title. And I think this is for the first time that I can remember in the tag team division, whether it's Raw or SmackDown Live, it's all focused on both these teams think they're the best team out there and they want to prove it. And this is going to be the culmination of everything coming to a head there. And this is probably going to be the second time we've seen two tag teams in Hell in a Cell. Last time we saw was Triple H, Shawn Michaels, DX against Legacy, Cody Rhodes, and Ted DiBiase.
Yeah, so it should be also another match that could potentially steal the show. And then, of course, we get to the WWE Championship in Jinder Mahal and Shinsuke Nakamura. Listen, and again, I'm going to use that word, and you can come over here and smack me on the hand every time I say that word.
I'm too tired to do it.
But I don't know. I don't know what to say. The cat's kind of out of the bag. It looks like Jinder's going to keep that title going into December as they go into the India tour. You think it might switch hands before that, and then Jinder will get the championship back. But I just can't believe that Nakamura is not going to come out the champion. How does he come out of Hell in a Cell looking all credible, and how does this not kill any momentum that Shinsuke Nakamura has? To have Jinder Mahal retain that title going into December, honestly, I don't think they even should have gotten into a rivalry. I think it should have been with somebody else. I think anything but a win for Nakamura is definitely a step back for him.
Well, Jeff, I'll answer that question with another question of my own. If it wasn't going to be Shinsuke Nakamura, who else would it have been?
Yeah,
It's hard.
The roster
isn't necessarily that deep. Timing was right for this, but unfortunately, the outcome and the preparation and everything that was put into it creatively has just completely fallen and not worked at all, in my opinion. And so, with this, all I can say is that the fact that even if Shinsuke Nakamura were to lose, and you're like, how can you do that? Because he's going to lose so much momentum. Let's also remember, too, the last rivalry Jinder Mahal had was against Randy Orton. And you think Randy Orton, with all his years in the business and everything he's done, that ran really stale as well. He couldn't get a win. And you know what? I understand, and maybe this is the cynical side of me when it comes to being a fan or just thinking that I know it all, right? But how many more times can we have the Singh brothers, whatever you want to call them, interfere in this, and it's the same shtick over and over again. Now, I'm all for the champion, you know, cheating to get the win, but it has to be a different result every single time. We're getting the same result every time Jinder Mahal goes in there. So it's not the fact that it doesn't make him a credible champion, but now it's becoming old. It's like, all right, we've seen this before. It's similar to when Jinder Mahal comes out and does his promos. Hey, I was a huge supporter of Jinder Mahal when it all started.
We all were. We both were.
On
we were
Talking Smack.
Looking for some change.
I saw Jinder Mahal, the person behind whatever you want to say, the character. When you see him on TV, he is this over-embellished. And if you want to get cheap heat, I don't even think it's getting cheap heat anymore. I think people, including myself personally, I look at it and I kind of just shake my head. I'm like, okay, when is this over? It's really failing to live up to any expectations. And if we're going to, you know, whenever it does come to an end, I think this whole reign of Jinder Mahal has, in my opinion, not been as successful as the WWE creative or Vince McMahon might have thought it would have been.
Do you think there's a possibility where they can take the title away from him before they go to the India trip? Or do you think that all perceived here, you would bet that Jinder Mahal comes out of Hell in a Cell as a champion?
The way it's being booked right now and the way it's kind of leading up to, I wouldn't be surprised if Shinsuke were to win, although I wouldn't want that to happen personally. You know why? Because it would take away the fact that, yes, he would win, there would be a rematch of some sort, and he would lose it pretty quickly automatically, and that would lead Jinder to take the title into December when they do their tour of India. Either way you slice it, it's going to lead to Jinder probably retaining the title or gain it for a second time. And right now, I just think timing of in terms of everything, storyline-wise, characters, the way they've been presented on television has not worked one bit. I want to see Shinsuke win it, but even if Shinsuke does win it, it's going to be a half-hearted celebration because nobody's going to really want to enjoy it.
So, you know, we're going to get to the predictions. We're going to get to the rest of the card after our interview with Miranda Salinas, which is coming up shortly. I want to switch over to Raw real quick and listen. You had the ultimate tease at the end of the show between the Shield as, you know, they were in the backstage locker room. Roman Reigns was licking his wounds, and then you see Dean Ambrose pop up, and then Seth Rollins. Yeah, he was licking his wounds. He got
I know, I just laugh
the,
at the idea he's actually licking his
the
wounds.
Dog, the big dog.
The big dog is licking his wounds. Yeah.
I think it's perfect alliteration for,
I would agree.
For that scenario backstage. But as I was saying, is the ultimate tease of the Shield, and it's leading up to them obviously returning. But now there's a twist and a turn. Maybe he's not confident that it could be Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel as the foes alongside The Miz. Maybe it's going to be Sheamus and Cesaro. You think it's fair for Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas for this to happen, or do you think it's actually right by the WWE to give it even more star power with Sheamus and Cesaro?
Look, Jeff, you and I have covered professional wrestling even prior to the High Spot podcast and talking about it amongst ourselves. In terms of fairness, Jeff, you are owed nothing, and nothing is fair in the world of professional wrestling or in life in general, right? So, yeah, you could say, oh, it's not fair because Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas should be in this type of scenario if it does become the fact that the Shield does reunite. But that's not going to happen. The way they were manhandled by Roman Reigns and basically destroyed with a steel chair on Raw, it's not going to give you any hopes that these two are going to come back. It actually might work in their favor. That's actually going to give them TV time away from The Miz. And, you know, yeah, if you put Sheamus and Cesaro and the epic matches they've had with Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, it makes more sense. There's more rivalry. That team doesn't like this team, and Roman Reigns is having a feud with The Miz. So all three of it work together. I just don't think it's believable enough because it really feels, regardless of how qualified Cesaro and Sheamus are and The Miz, you're just putting these three together to be destined to lose to The Shield, being reunited. And this is where I was against the whole time because I'm like, if we're going to bring them back, let's bring them back against the Bullet Club, the real Bullet Club. Let's bring them back against Gallus and Anderson and Finn Balor or something like that.
Of course, WWE has just dropped the ball with, you know, Gallus and Anderson.
Can I say Bullet Club? Am I going to get a cease and desist?
No, only if you say too sweet. So we're going to have to talk about that actually when we do the close. We're going to see if we're going to do it and risk the cease and desist.
Okay.
But, well, at least there's no hand gestures in audio, which is a great thing.
Yeah. We're not doing that.
But again, though, they dropped the ball with Gallows and Anderson. Finn Balor seems to be stuck in mired, I'm going to say a sophisticated word, with Bray Wyatt, which is where I'm going to lead to this. Sister Abigail, to me, is the only thing that can save Bray Wyatt. Now, we thought that Randy Orton got rid of her ashes, or she was in that shack that Bray Wyatt got, Bray Wyatt's shack that burned down.
Yeah, he burned down that barn or whatever
it
was.
We thought Sister Abigail was lost, but you know, as it turns out, that she's alive and well, or you know, some sort of remnant of, you know, Sister Abigail exists. You read things, you're thinking that they're going to bring in a female competitor, which would be ridiculous because, you know, there's just no spot on the roster for this unless she's going to be a fixture with Bray Wyatt and not compete. But now you're hearing that it's going to be actually Bray Wyatt dressed up sort of as Finn Balor in his Sister Abigail rendition, just like Finn Balor has the demon. That would actually, to me, in my eyes, just kill Bray Wyatt. And if he loses, what more can you do with Bray? To me, Sister Abigail is the only way that you can save this Bray Wyatt character going forward. If not, you might as well bury him or, you know, send him back to SmackDown, because it's not working.
In all honesty, Jeff, I think this whole Sister Abigail scenario is not going to help Bray Wyatt one bit. I mean, let's be honest here. Everything he's done, if he's going to go to that route that you explained, he's going to be dressed as Sister Abigail as if it was a version of the demon that Finn Balor does, then you're just devaluing the character of Bray Wyatt. We've been back and forth on this, too, where I think they try to emphasize it where Finn Balor was able to defeat Bray Wyatt as Finn Balor, not the demon. He wasn't hanging on to that as a means of that's the only way he was going to get validity or actually be a competitor when he is the demon. You wanted to kind of get away from that. You're doing the opposite now. You're devaluing Bray Wyatt as a character. And ultimately, despite whatever they do here, I even had the inclination maybe it was Paige. But, you know, that might be just a foregone conclusion possibly because of the laugh that I heard. Sounded similar to her, but, you know, she'll probably come back as Paige. So.
And probably on SmackDown as well. Oh, and CFOs, the rumors I'm hearing, don't change your song. That's a great song. Don't touch it.
Yeah, but at the same time, they want to probably revamp her just like they revamp everybody's song. So, yeah, unfortunately, we have no say in it. But we know it does tend to happen when people do come back. They want a new upbeat version or something similar to what they normally had because she's been long gone for such a long period of time. But back to Bray Wyatt, though, it just hurts him. It doesn't help him. I think, honestly, I was so looking forward to this rivalry with Finn Balor, and right now it's completely fluttered out of control. And right now with Bray Wyatt, I don't know what you can do to save him. I say revamp him, make him like the badass character, like the American badass that The Undertaker had.
Are you
That's
really
the only
serious?
Way.
Coming out on a bike and being a biker guy?
I'm not saying do the exact same thing. Something similar to that where he's more real, because this whole gothic stuff, this whole paranormal thing doesn't work. It's actually more.
It could have worked.
It could have worked, but it doesn't. It's comedical now because, yes, you're going to bring Sister Abigail. Bray, you've said the same thing every single time. You keep falling and failing. His words, his spiritual brethren or his gospel, whatever he's preaching, it's fallen on deaf ears because nobody believes it because he can't back it up.
Man, at all. And how the future would have changed if he just would have beat John Cena at WrestleMania?
Yeah, we can go back to that, but at the same time,
that's where
just,
I go back
yeah,
to it. Yeah, that's but, where, to me, it started.
Well, he had an opportunity again to defeat The Undertaker, but they decided for The Undertaker to go over on Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania 2, so.
But
not WrestleMania 2, but WrestleMania 31.
You're going to say that's when it happened, or do you think it was, I think it was WrestleMania 30.
I said we can go back to that. But at the same time, there are other opportunities for him to make up for the fact that he didn't get the win over John Cena. I'm not saying that was the make or break and that was it. He had other opportunities. I mean, the mere fact he became champion at WrestleMania 33 and lost to Randy Orton, really? You're going to make him lose the title right up front to Randy Orton?
Yeah, and it just seemed like blow. It just seemed like ho-hum too, right? Didn't really. If I was watching Mania, I'd be like, I thought Randy Orton was a champion anyway. So
that might have been the first spark. But, you know, the WWE creatives been pouring gasoline in that fire, and now it's completely uncontrollable.
Listen, I think Mickie James is a fine wine.
Talk about fire. Yeah.
Exactly. She's on fire. Why the WWE always needs to go back to that age crap. I mean, it goes back, and I don't think you can say back further, Brian, like you did with the Taker. It goes back further to Piggy James. It goes back to all this stupid crap that they load on because they think it's funny that creatives are like, let's diss on her weight. Let's diss on her age. Listen, 38 to me is not old. So, you know, the whole Walker thing and the diapers and just the reference to just being old, it's ridiculous. It's stupid. They don't need to do that. And again, they continue to push that sophomoric humor on somebody that obviously you devalue her. Make her look strong coming out. You don't need those extra, you know, ribs on her and stuff like that. To me, just so unnecessary. And it totally takes away from a match between a legend in Mickie James and Alexa Bliss, which I'm looking forward to seeing. But just the whole devaluing and the age thing, whether it's, you know, jabs here and there, to me it just doesn't make sense. It's not necessary.
Well, you say it's not necessary, Jeff, but, you know, who loves that sophomoric humor?
Oh, God damn, pal. Jackie Gleason humor.
Exactly. A big Vinnie Mac showing them grapefruits.
You know a lot of people are doing now the Vince McMahon impression from Something to Wrestle With?
Yeah, it's a fun impression to do.
God damn, pal.
Bruce Pritchard does a great job of it.
Slapper.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, all the momentum they had initially when, you know, when Mickie James came out and basically stated her cause after Alexa Bliss had successfully defended her title at No Mercy and was given the question whether she considered Mickie James a competitor, it all boiled up to that. That's where age was thrown in. That's where the fact that they were making jokes about she's so old. But then Mickie James came out the following Monday with a great promo. I was thinking, all right, wow. Now you're setting something up. Obviously, it's for the title, but it's something that can go into a different direction because Mickie James, in my opinion, is a future Hall of Famer and everything she's accomplished in the WWE and professional wrestling. So it has a great history here because she's theoretically the past of what she's accomplished. She's been the trailblazer, the pioneer, whatever you want to call it, for the women's division. And here's Alexa Bliss being the staple now of, you know, if you want to talk about Charlotte, Sasha, Bayley, Becky Lynch, okay. But Alexa Bliss has come out of her way now through her own identity to carry that torch and that mantle as well. That was a great way to go. Now with this whole comedic sophomore humor like you're talking about, it's kind of just defeating the purpose. It's making it more
so
funny.
So you agree with me?
Yeah.
So you've gone around this whole time where you just said I agree with you.
Well, no, I'm going to give you an elaborate explanation because when you say, oh, this sucks,
I'm just
terrible,
chops,
pal. You know, it doesn't make sense. We want our listeners to know that we have a very logical, educated idea, unlike you.
Ouch, man. You just hit him below the belt today.
Oh, jeez. Jeff's so sensitive nowadays.
But we're talking about, I guess, legends, right, with Mickie James, but also the young as far as Alexa Bliss in the future. So let's talk about another person who's the future of this business, especially in the women's division, and that's Miranda Salinas. Now, you know her from competing in the Mae Young Classic, was limited in the first round by Rhea Ripley, but you know what? She has a bright future. She's so young, and she actually was trained by Booker T, WWE Hall of Famer, for Reality of Wrestling in Houston. So we talk about so many things with our guests coming up. Miranda Salinas, we talk about what it's like to train under Booker T, just what exactly it was like to compete in the Mae Young Classic, and just exactly what she thought of her matchup at the Mae Young Classic. You'd be surprised at her answer, so let's get it started right now, our interview with Miranda Salinas from the Mae Young Classic. All right, Brian, if you saw the Mae Young Classic, then you know this name, Miranda Salinas, amazing competitor, also from Reality of Wrestling, and she joins us now here on the High Spot Podcast with Jeff Martin and the Trendsetter. Miranda, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Really good, really good. Thanks for coming on. First and foremost, you know, obviously you train out of Houston. That's where you're from. Of course, it's been affected by Hurricane Harvey. How is everything going on right now, and how is the road to recovery for Houston?
It's getting a little better. Like, after the first week, there was really, really bad traffic. So all of that traffic is, like, gone out the way. And a lot of people are, like, volunteering. I know there's a lot of construction going on at buildings or whatnot. But I think things are getting better. Luckily, I wasn't affected by it, me or any of my family. But I'm just hoping for the best for everybody else that did lose their homes and their cars or whatnot. But I think everybody's helping, like, as a community. So that's really, really good.
So, Miranda, you know, listen, a big moment for you had to be, of course, the Mae Young Classic. It's probably been right now, obviously we call the pinnacle right now so far of a young career. Talk about your experience and talk about finding out that you were going to compete or get involved. How did that come about?
So I had a tryout in February. I believe it was February 4th. And at the moment, they weren't really giving anybody contracts or giving them a yes or a no, because they were still, like, deciding if they were going to do a women's tournament or not. And I guess they were just looking at different girls from all over these different tryouts all over the world and basically deciding who and what they wanted to use. And then I think it was, I think I got received the email on April 27th. It was like in a, at first I got an email and it was like, maybe, I didn't get a yes or no. I kind of got a, maybe we can use you. Then like a few weeks later, it was April 27th. I got the email. It was like, it said that it was an official invitation to be part of the Mae Young Classic. And I was just, I couldn't believe it at the moment. I was so happy. I was excited and I wasn't like, it just felt unreal. So I was really, really excited about everything. And then 2 days later, I had a match down in San Antonio and I sprained my ankle. So I was on crutches for like 4 weeks. So I was really, really excited. And then like everything started going downhill. So I was just resting and recovering and just praying for the best. And then whenever the tournament came, it was like my first time back in the ring, like after like 3 months. So I was basically recovering the whole entire time.
Oh, wow. So you could barely tell from the fact of your performance in the Mae Young Classic that anything was wrong. So that's definitely a testament to you, Miranda. Something I always find interesting. I mean, obviously the process of getting called up for it, training, that's exciting. But I've always interested when we talk to certain talent that come on the show, it's like, where did you get that first itch? It's always the, you know, the first thing, like, who's the first wrestler you saw? Where did you get the first inkling that this is something you wanted to do for a living?
So, I mean, I've always been a fan since I was little, and I've always been really, really into it, like collecting shirts, going to all the shows whenever they came down, having all the little action figures. And then I had like a gap in high school where I didn't watch it. And I think one day I was just like scrolling through TV and it was on and I was like, oh, I haven't seen this in a while. And then I started watching it again every week. And then I was just like, it was just something that I wanted to do. At the time, I think, I think the women's division, there was like maybe, Natalia and Beth Phoenix and those girls, but I would go back on YouTube and watch the old stuff. When I was little, I'm a really, really big fan of Trish Stratus. So she's always been an inspiration for me. Mm-hmm. And I would just watch it and I'm just like, I want to do that. I know I can do that. So then I just looked up some wrestling schools and I went and got trained and then I've pretty much been addicted ever since.
So you decided to train and you go to Reality of Wrestling. Was that the first place that you went to apply?
It actually was not. I knew about it, though. The only thing is, at the time, I didn't have the money to afford it. So I started off at Tugboat Taylor School downtown. And I was there for about a year and I learned my basics. And then whenever I was ready to learn a little bit more, that's whenever I got contacted by Booker T. And then I went and trained down there.
Now, Miranda, you're what, 20, 23 years old?
Yeah, I'm 23.
Oh, jeez. So young. But sorry, I just want to hear that number.
I feel like I'm 50.
Yeah, I know. I can imagine, right, of course, with all the stuff you guys put your body through. And, you know, so much respect from Jeff and I in terms of what you do. Because if it was easy, everybody would do it, but it's not. But, you know, speaking of that, I mean, I know going to wrestling school, and we've spoken to a lot of people about this too, you learn the movesets, you learn the skills, you go through the drills to kind of get a collective idea of how to handle yourself in the ring and communicate with somebody else. In terms of character, and we saw a good portion of it during the vignettes and the packages during the Mae Young Classic when you're talking about yourself. But, you know, I always feel that the best characters are extensions of yourself. How do you feel you are at this point right now, at 23 years old and still a long ways to learn, obviously, and developing yourself as a character and as a personality? Do you feel you're kind of on the right path of where you want to go, or do you still feel there's a lot of growing in terms of a character for yourself?
I feel like there's a lot more growing and a lot more to learn and more to experience. I go by, like, Miranda's my real name, so I go by my name. And only because I try not to be something different than what I actually am. I just like to be myself. So I'm still trying to figure out how to kind of be myself in like a heelish way, but also in a babyface way when I need to be, and just fit that into, like, you know, into my character. I think that's probably the biggest thing that I need to work on. But I know it's only going to get better with more experience and more time, and that'll all fall into place. But I feel like things are going good as far as wrestling or whatnot. And I feel like I'm headed in the right direction. Hopefully, I think so.
No, yeah, of course. What do you feel more comfortable with, heel or babyface? Because a lot of people say it's, you know, it's very challenging to get them to boo you, but it's even more difficult to get them to cheer you.
Wait, Bryce, she's a heel. You're definitely, I could tell you like being a heel.
Honestly, so when I first started training, I was taught, I was like, they were like, you start off as a babyface. so you can learn, because heel caused most of the match. I don't know if that's like an old school thing, but that's how I was taught within my first year of training. So I was a heel like my first year. And then whenever I went to Booker's, I was a heel there too, but it was like kind of weird, because I was a heel, but I would still get cheered. And I would still like do the bad things and make the facials and try to get the crowd to boo me, but I would still get cheered. I don't know if that's just because they didn't see a lot of women's wrestlers or whatever. But I worked heel for about three and a half years. And then I finally started working face, because it just, they were just like, well, you just keep getting cheered, so you just need to work face. And I always wanted to work face. I just didn't know like how I would be as a face. But honestly, I like it. I mean, it just depends. I wouldn't say that I like working heel better than face, because I feel like I can do both really good. I like working face because I get to show that I can actually wrestle and I can do a whole bunch of cool stuff. But I also like working heel. So it's just, it's, you know, I don't have a preference. It's either or, it's whatever that show or whatever that promoter wants. But other people tell me that when I work babyface, I kind of still come off like heelish and aggressive. So I think it's more natural for me to be a heel, and it's more easier for me to be a heel because everybody says I look better as a heel, but I really have no preference, honestly. Like, I have fun in there no matter what.
Lita called you sassy, but I was like, nah, she's tough. You know, sassy was a little too, you know, I don't know if it was a little, you know, face, but I was like, nah, she's sassy is maybe fifth or sixth on the list. I'm definitely going to say she's tough. You come off as tough. You take no nonsense. I wouldn't want to be in a dark alley with you because you're tough, even though, you know, you're 5 feet of fury. That's fine, but you're still tough in my eyes.
Yeah, I am.
Question to you is, again, Mae Young Classic, how many times are you a tough critic? Do you look back on that match and say, hey, I could have done better? Or were you satisfied with the match against Rhea Ripley? Talk about that. Are you a tough critic on yourself? Did you like that match?
I'm not going to say that I didn't like it, because I don't want to come off like, oh my God, I worked the Mae Young Classic, but I didn't like it. So I really, really appreciate the opportunity. I wish the match was longer. Because we only had about 4 minutes, including entrances. So I was, I basically did what they wanted me to do. If I guess you can put it like that. I did what they wanted me to do. I did my job, and that was it. I wish I had more time just to show more of what I could do, but it is what it is. I'm not going to complain about anything. I'm happy that I had the opportunity, because there were some girls that were down there that got no matches and didn't get to do anything the whole entire time there. I feel like it could have been a little bit better than what it was, but I also feel like I was going through some things at the time, just coming off of the injury. I couldn't train. I was out of the ring for about 3 months. So my first time back in the ring, I was down there like so scared. I thought that I mentally prepared myself and told myself, I'm going to go down there, go through rehearsal, and I'm going to break my leg, because that's how bad my sprain was. I had like a grade 3 ankle sprain, and I really couldn't do anything. And I didn't say anything about it to anybody, because I know that they wouldn't have let me perform.
Wow.
But it was just, I think it was more of a mental thing, and it was just a me thing. But I mean, it was a good opportunity, so I can't complain about anything.
How are you doing now?
I've had better matches though.
How's the ankle?
It's 100% better. It's good. Okay.
Well, you know, there's no doubt that you're, you know, Jeff mentioned, they want to say sassy, tough. I mean, you're legitimately, you go out there because you want to, you want to perform, taking that risk, knowing that in the back of your mind something could happen, but still wanting to go out there and perform. Just as a testament to you and your commitment, obviously, to your craft and what you do, Miranda. Speaking of that, though, do you feel that this, even though you did want more time, and of course everybody did, you know, in my case, in my mindset, you know, something is better than nothing, and you're more recognized now. Do you get a sense of that, that maybe, despite the fact that it didn't go as long as you wanted to, that you've used this platform now to your benefit, and maybe you're getting what, maybe more bookings, maybe more notoriety? Do you sense that now?
After an extra zero in the bookings? I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. I don't sit back and look at it and like, oh man, like that sucked. And I'm not like down about it or anything. It was basically, I went out there, I did my job, and now, I am. I was already booked pretty much every weekend, but I wasn't taking bookings because of my injury. But now I have better quality shows. I'm making a lot more money than what I was making before. Nice. And I have a lot of exciting things coming up. And it's going really, really good. So yeah, I'm happy about everything, and I'm glad that I got the opportunity that other people didn't get. I'm doing really, really good out here right now. I just wrestled Tessa Blanchard maybe on Sunday in Chicago, so that was really, really good. I was really happy and excited about that. I have some Shimmer and some Rise stuff coming up, and then I have some stuff overseas, but I'm not really talking about it yet until it happens. So I definitely met a lot of people, and it's going good. It's going to go really, really good, and I'm excited for what the future holds.
Yeah, that's great. Working with Tessa Blanchard again, she was in the Mae Young Classic too. I think, you know, her star is shining as well, similar to yours, Miranda. You know, Jeff and I talk on the show constantly about how right now, this time, this pinnacle, and this stage right now that we're speaking, it's such a great time to be not only a fan of professional wrestling, but I can only imagine it's a great time to be a talent, an athlete, a superstar, a wrestler, whatever you want to call it, because now there's so many avenues out there you can go. Most people think, and I'm sure the ultimate dream is WWE. I get it, because it's the big company, everybody grows up watching it, but there's so many more opportunities now, especially for women getting the notoriety of women's wrestling out there. Do you sense the same thing too right now with social media and the ability of branding yourself, that just so many more options for you and a great time to be a woman in wrestling?
Oh, yeah, for sure. WWE is great. They're the biggest wrestling company in the world. So obviously, you always want to shoot for the stars and, you know, push yourself to be the best. But there's so many other opportunities out there that I would say don't get so caught up at trying to go to one place and forgetting about your journey, because there's so many opportunities out here and there's so much more to experience before you get to that level. There's a lot out here, and I would want to be on the indies for at least maybe another 2 years before I maybe signed a WWE contract, just because I want to have the experience and I want to travel the world and I want to work different places and meet different people. I want to work for every single big company out there on the independent scene.
So obviously, you know, you want to do it that way. A lot of people, sometimes all they know is WWE because they get signed so early, but you're doing it the other way where you're traveling, you have other things coming up. Obviously, when you say overseas, first thing me and Brian looked at each other like, Japan. So mm-hmm. you're probably going to get something like that, or even go to
or
Mexico.
Europe, England.
Yeah, something like that, which is awesome because a lot of the veterans have gone to their places. One of the best persons that is the best example is like Chris Jericho, because he had Japan, he had Mexico, he had these other places.
Germany,
where he
England,
yeah,
yes.
And Brian, of course, he's let me tell you about the trendsetter. He's a huge Jericho mark, so he'll fill out anything that I mess up about Chris Jericho. So, you know, you have guys like that have that experience, and I think it's going to be something that you say it's good, because, you know, you're 23. There's no rush to be in the WWE, but you do have a trainer in Booker T, WWE Hall of Famer, Reality of Wrestling. How instrumental has he been in you know, getting prepared for the Mae Young Classic?
He's very, very supportive. And what I like about him is he's very straightforward. So he doesn't sugarcoat anything. Like, it is what it is. If there's something wrong, if you're doing something wrong, he'll tell you exactly how it is. And he will look you in your eye and say, hey, you need to fix this. If not, like, you're going to go home. So over there, I really, really like it, because you have to get better, or if not, you're just not going to get used. So he pushes you to do better, and he's very, very straightforward. But it comes from a good place, and he knows a lot more. He knows, like, the experience, and at the end of the day, I appreciate everything that he's done, because if it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't have been as good as I was when I had my tryout, and I probably wouldn't have learned all the little stuff as far as working the camera and doing facials and TV, because it's so many little things that he critiques that matter and that make everything so much better. So I mean, he's straightforward, but I appreciate it, and it comes from a good place. And he only wants to see, all he wants to see is he wants to see his students go get trained and get out of there. He wants to see his students make it big, and I appreciate everything that he does.
Yeah, definitely, because a lot of people sometimes take that criticism as if you're personally attacking him. And, you know, it's an ego-driven business, too. So sometimes you think you're doing it right, and you're constantly looking at somebody nitpicking at you everything. You're like, geez, can one day he stop doing it? But if he's not doing it, then he's not making you the best you can possibly can be. And Miranda, you know, watching the Mae Young Classic, seeing what you've done, not only for Shimmer and all these other events, it's pretty clear that at 23 years old, you got a good head on your shoulders, and the sky's the limit for you, too. But something I wanted to ask you, because, you know, just speaking to you, you seem to be a very straight shooter. You tell it like it is. But you also seem to be very humble, too. You have a good
a sense of what direction you want to go. Where did that come from? Did it come from your upbringing? You have a great support system. Where do you keep that mentality? I mean, you obviously have a hard work ethic, but where's that all come from?
I mean, honestly, I just don't know. I don't really have an answer to that.
I stumped her, Jeff.
You
got, I stumped her.
Woo! Huh?
Nah, I was joking. I said I stumped you.
Oh, there's a lot of people out here, and a lot of people that have been working for less than what I've been working, and they have, like, these crazy egos, like, maybe because they have family in the business or because they're dating somebody or they know somebody or something like that. But I feel like if you have a big ego like that, that's when things start going wrong because you can't take anything for granted. And I feel like at the end of the day, it all comes down to hard work. I mean, I love what I do and I never want to be out of the ring. When I'm in the ring, that's like my home. That's my happy place. So I love wrestling. I love being in the locker room. I love being around wrestlers. I'm really humble about everything and I just appreciate everything that everybody does for me, and I just ask as many questions as I can from people that have more experience than me because I just want to continue learning and I just want to continue working hard because at the end of the day, hard work beats talent and it's going to pay off.
Talking to Miranda Salinas, did you, heading into the Mae Young Classic when you were at the Performance Center, did you know anyone beforehand? Have you had the chance to get into the ring with anyone before? Any friendships or any advice that you were given to? I know a lot of the female WWE stars were there as well. Did you happen to pick someone's brain? Did you happen to get any good advice when you were down there?
I got advice from everybody that I could. I asked as many questions as I could, but also when we were down there, we were very, very busy. We were there for 7 days. We had to rehearse matches 3 or 4 times every single day. We had to get our hair and makeup done. We had to shoot promos. We had to do interviews. So if I had downtime, which I had very little downtime, I did ask questions. I met everybody in the locker room and just made really, really good connections. There was a few girls that were there for my previous tryout. Jessica James was there. She's down here from Texas. Barbie Hayden was there. Who else was there? Renee Michelle was at my tryout. I ended up sharing a room with her. So a few of the girls that were at my tryout were there. And then a few of the guys that were at my tryout were there as well at the NXT Performance Center. But we were really, really busy, but I got to ask a lot of questions whenever I could, if that makes sense.
Real quick, not just from there, but is there still somebody, for example, like we're all wrestling fans here and you are as well, growing up watching and paying attention to the business. Do you still get starstruck or are you now in the mindset at 23 years of age when you're in there, say, for example, in the Performance Center getting ready for this inaugural Mae Young Classic? Are you like, I am now an equal. They are my peers. Do you get that sense?
Yeah,
are you still like a huge fan? You're just like, oh my God,
yeah,
that's Trish Stratus, that's Lita, oh my God.
Yeah, I don't look at anybody as like a fan anymore. I just look at them as like coworkers. Obviously, I have respect for everybody, and I always will. I guess it just grew out of me that now I am them, and I'm doing what they're doing. So I don't I'm not gonna go up to anybody and be like, oh my God, and ask for an autograph like how I would have when I first started training. I just see them as like, these are people that I'm working with now. So I don't like get all crazy and like, I don't want to say this, but mark out when I see like a big superstar. I just show respect, shake their hand and then ask as many questions as I can.
What was the biggest misconception you had as a fan now that you're in the business? Can you pick one? One misconception you might have had as a fan? Because you said you grew out of being a fan and now you're in there. You shake everybody's hand. You're respectful because now you feel you're an equal. You're a peer. You're one of them. But what was the biggest misconception you might have had as a fan and now looking into it as you're in the business?
I would say just my first year of wrestling, I wasn't really studying wrestling. I was watching it as a fan. So I was still a fan and I still was like, oh, man, he lost. Oh, man, she won. Opposed to studying the matches, I was still looking at it as a fan, but I wasn't trying to look at it as a fan, but it was just natural. I was still a fan for like a year and a half. And today I'm not like that. Now I actually study everything, like facials, matches, you know, like I said, I won't go and mark out to anybody. I'll show my respect. But back then it wasn't like that. I remember when I was maybe like 18 in my first year of wrestling, I was like a rosebud. on Raw or something, and I saw Paige at at the ring, and I completely lost my mind, and I was
That's what I was going to ask you.
I felt like an idiot.
Miranda, I got to ask you. So you're a Rosebud, right, with Adam Rose. So you're there, I guess, you know, you fill out the paperwork because you're an extra and all that stuff, and you hang around. You know, the question everybody wants answered is catering really that good?
Oh, God.
Oh my God, catering is so good. They have everything. And I don't know how those girls stay so small and have that food in front of them every single day.
It's like they can only eat it in their mind, I guess, right?
But it's everything. It's like chicken, vegetables, rice, candy, coffee, cake, cookies. It's everything that's good for you and everything that's bad for you is there. Cereal, like, it's everything. So it's amazing, though.
What was the biggest vice for you there? Like, I spoke to certain people, and they're like, oh, the dessert tray. That was my Achilles heel right there. What was it for you?
Oh, it was the dessert tray.
I knew it. Screw the chicken. Let me have some apple pie, right?
Yeah.
Listen, Miranda, if you can, tomorrow night you get booked, and you have to face, whether it's anyone on the WWE roster in the females or anybody on the independents right now, tomorrow night, and you say, I'm down, doesn't matter if I got to pay my own flight or whatever, like that, I'm down. Who is it that you're getting in the ring with?
Toni Storm.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. She was very impressive in that Mae Young Classic.
Oh, she's amazing.
And she's very funny too. It's like she has a very funny wit about her
too.
Like
very funny.
Yeah, she is. She laughs. The thing you can tell somebody has a good personality is when they laugh at their own jokes. They don't take themselves too seriously. And Toni seems to be that kind of person in a good sense, because again, she's very talented in the ring, as you are yourself, Miranda. And it's just great to be able to joke about things like catering, for example, because ultimately, although this is a job, quote unquote, you're doing something you love. And Jeff and I really admire the fact that we're able to speak to you, because you're somebody that's going after their dreams. So thank you so much for that, and so much respect from us on the High Spot Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me,
Miranda. And before we let you go, what advice can you give to somebody? Because obviously, Brian mentioned you're chasing your dream. She's living her dream, and eventually, one day, no doubt, we will see her in NXT and then, you know, in WWE. What advice can you give somebody that's chasing their dream? Not even just in wrestling, but just going after their dream.
Just stay focused and don't get distracted, because distractions will pull you away from going forward. So you have to stay focused and you have to remember what you want, and you can't let other people or other things going on in your life distract you, because then you're no longer focused. So you just have to give it 100%. Just shoot for the stars and go for it.
Awesome.
It's a very focused and fierce Miranda, Jeff.
All right. Where can everyone follow you on social media, Miranda?
Okay. Twitter is @Miranda_S. And then Instagram is @KeepingUpWithMiranda_.
Awesome. And again, you know, just the sky's the limit for you. And thank you so much for coming on the High Spot Podcast, and hope we have you on again in the future.
All right. Thank you so much. I look forward to speaking with you all again.
Awesome. All right. That was Miranda Salinas, Mae Young Classic competitor. She's got such a bright future, Bri. You can tell her passion. And I told you, Lita called her sassy, but she's tough, man. I would not want to get in a dark alley with her. Because she's tough. She will beat me up. She will give me 2 black eyes. Definitely someone, though, to look in the future. Now, she said she had some surprises. She will be touring with Shimmer down the road. So that's one of her surprises that she mentioned in the audio. So congratulations goes out to Miranda Salinas. Definitely someone to look out in the future, and definitely someone who I think is on WWE's radar.
There'd be no question she's on WWE's radar. I think anybody that was in the tournament might be on the radar. But, yeah, although it was a quick outing, like I kind of mentioned before when we opened the show, it's impressive for the mere fact that you've been on that platform now. You've been on that stage, regardless if it was a quick exit off the first round, because now she's had so much more notoriety after this in terms of booking and now touring with Shimmer. I mean, a lot of that came from participating in it, and she knew how important it was. And give full credit to her for the fact that she wasn't 100% leading into it. She still, you know, had the guts and the intestinal fortitude more than most men would to continue on something when she knew she wasn't 100% healthy, and knowing that she might be risking her health by going out there. Although she didn't mention anything to anybody else, the ultimate outcome, now she's 100%. And now begs the question, what would it have been like if she was 100%? So now hopefully we'll find the answer to that, not only when she tours with Shimmer and other independent promotions, but
most likely when she does make her return back to the WWE, which I think is only a matter of time. She's got a good head on her shoulders, and you know, she's driven. Like, we've spoken to her, and she's very focused, and she knows what she wants. Most people that age, like I've said to you many times before, Jeff, really don't know what they want, are still trying to kind of figure it out. She seems like she has a lot of things figured out and is going down the right direction.
Yeah, also too with Stardom as well, so she's got a bright future. And interesting about her competing with that ankle injury, but now she's 100%. And also too, we want to our heart goes out to everyone in Houston still who's recovering from the hurricane. Luckily, she wasn't affected too. And again, you could tell that from we heard from Hyann before, Hyann Young, she just like Booker T doesn't pull any punches. He's straight up, and you know, he'll tell you what he thinks, and he's not gonna, like I said, hold any punches. So it's amazing.
Neither will Shane. She's pretty straightforward as well.
No, definitely. Yeah. She's a straight shooter. So, all right, thanks goes out to Miranda Salinas. Definitely look forward to talking to her in the future. But now, Brother Trendsetter, it's time for our WWE Hell in a Cell prediction. So you ready? You set?
Oh, boy.
I think you beat me last time for the No Mercy predictions. I know we were watching. We were going, oh, I won this
one. Were we that off? I thought we were kind of par for par.
I think you beat me, though.
Only on a few, though. I'll tell you what. We're pretty par for par on that one.
I did not write them down as far as like the tally. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to write them down.
Okay.
So now going forward, we're going to do our predictions and see who's better.
The winner gets buffalo wings.
You promise?
There you go. Do I look worried?
Hey, you know what? Whoever wins comes.
It's a win-win situation here. Exactly. It doesn't matter.
Love freaking wings. So juicy and tasty. All right, Brian. Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler is, to me, in my eyes, the killer of NXT debuts. For some reason, the whole Shinsuke Nakamura thing didn't work out. Bobby Roode now, basically Ziggler's in the whole thing of making fun of people's entrances, telling Bobby Roode that he's all entrance. Your prediction, who's going to come out victorious?
It's going to be Bobby Roode. There's no question about that. How this match is going to turn out. You would think with all the experience that a guy like Bobby Roode has and Dolph Ziggler that they'll be pulling off a 5-star match. Unfortunately, though, with Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode, who is an acquired taste, he has a unique style, I don't know if it's going to live up to the billing. But also, that being said, I haven't been all 100% on this whole Bobby Roode baby.
It's getting lost
thing.
In the shuffle.
He's getting lost in the shuffle. He shouldn't be. He's a major player.
On SmackDown, where there's nobody on there.
And it's like he's going to have to prove himself all over again. My goodness, the guy's proven himself. He's had a lengthy career. He's not some rookie, guys. He deserves to be given that type of notoriety. And I just see him better as a heel than a babyface.
I'm going to go with Bobby Roode as well, so I think we both agree on Bobby Roode.
Okay.
Do you think Dolph Ziggler's just cashing it in? Cashing in the checks? I don't want to say that about anybody.
I don't think he's cashing in the checks. I just think the fact that WWE is saying, Arslan, we don't know what to do with you, so do this and go out there. I don't think the WWE creative, and how many times have you said this during the show, has a plan for Dolph Ziggler. So Dolph Ziggler right now is trying to make the best of a bad situation.
We're going to kill two birds with one stone here. The Fashion Police... or Fashion Files, you're very high on it. I think it's run its course. I think, fine. Think of something else. You can only spoof so many things.
You would think so.
They're going to spoof, what's that movie with Quentin Tarantino? I'm
drawing a blank here.
Yeah.
He's done a lot of movies.
Samuel Jackson and John Travolta.
Yeah, that one. I don't remember the name of it. I know what you're talking about, though.
Yeah, so they're doing a spoof of that. Okay. It was supposed to be on SmackDown. It gets pushed on here, and then you hear that Gable and Shelton Benjamin are getting pushed to the pre-show to take on the Hype Bros. Your thoughts on both, you know, I wouldn't say matches, but both, I guess, bits of entertainment?
Well, that's the thing. You know, Brizango's doing is basically entertainment, Jeff. I mean, I know you think it's running
its course.
I'm
not feeling it anymore.
You're not feeling anymore? That's perfectly fine, but I can't hate on the guys because they're doing the best with the situation.
It's going
to
make me resent them. They're shoving it down my throat. Plus, if it was important, would they keep pushing it at segments?
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to finish your statement. No, I didn't. I thought you had paused there. I'm sorry.
It's an awkward pause in the show where you don't want, but you get. You know.
But looking, you're over it. But the crowd really seems to like it, though. So you know, as much as we like to think we know what the audience likes, I mean that time situation where they were battling against the Usos and they came ever so close to defeating them. I think it was for the SmackDown Live Tag Team Titles. It was exciting. People were behind it. I know comedic banter like that isn't your shtick, but at the same time, it's working for them, and I can give them mad props for that. As for, you know, the Hype Bros going one-on-one with
Gable and Benjamin,
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but right now it's like, you know, Gable, as much as I like him, he's kind of a stale figure where, you know, he's kind of like the classic rah-rah baby face. And yeah, I don't think that kind of flies nowadays, unfortunately. He's very talented in the ring. I thought he was going to make more as a singles competitor. The mere fact they're putting him with Shelton Benjamin, who knows what happens there? I mean, they're just basically replacing Jason Jordan here with a much older, more experienced Shelton Benjamin who's gotten himself over. So maybe that helps Jason. Maybe that helps Chad Gable, but I don't know.
They know what the hell they're doing.
I'm not against the fact that they're in a pre-show. You need something to establish that, and these two teams work well together. They have worked well together. I think that's the reason why you put them on the pre-show. You want to amp up people to get into the arena early to watch this show.
I just find it hard to believe that they cannot push Gable and Benjamin any harder than they can and have them on the pre-show when there's so much filler on a two-hour show now, because before SmackDown used to be all action. This one was very promo-heavy. I get that. Hell in a Cell's coming up. They got to sell Owens and Shane McMahon and the rest of the card. They could do so much better with Gable and Shelton Benjamin. If I was a genius and if I knew what was going on and how to help Gable, I would. I have no freaking idea what to do. And
all right, Lenny Poffo. Nobody knows what to do.
Lenny Poffo?
Yeah, you're the genius, aren't you? That's what you said. If I was a genius.
Only in my own mind.
I can't do rhymes like he does or do really well in poetry. But here's the thing, Jeff. I don't want us to sound like we're complaining and we're bitter about stuff, because it kind of comes off that way. But at the same time, yeah, the main focus is on...
You can be frustrated.
You can be frustrated, but at the same time, Jeff, we are constantly always saying, oh, well, creative doesn't know what to do with them. Doesn't know what to do. Should we be surprised at this point? It's been a steady flow of inconsistency, whether you're looking at Raw or SmackDown Live. So the mere fact that we're just mentioning this now and like, oh, what are they doing with Shelton Benjamin and Gable? Why are they doing this with Breezango? I'm sick and tired of having something force-feed down my throat. Well, you know, we're getting Roman Reigns, aren't we? We're getting the Shield reunion being force-fed to us, right? We don't want to see that. I mean, I'm sure people in Colorado, you know, the air's pretty high, so they probably weren't thinking clearly, and they're kind of a little woozy. They're cheering for Roman Reigns. I'm like, okay, well, you know, I think, are they cheering him because he's going to be reunited with the Shield?
That's a trendsetter's thoughts on the people in Colorado, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I think I'm not going to Colorado anytime soon.
We hate them because they beat our team in the playoffs, so.
Okay, but yeah, it's like, nobody has their own cup of tea, Jeff, so it's like it's going to be this way for a while. What you want to have the focus on are things like the tag team titles, WWE Championship, because hopefully with those things are taken care of and corrected, everything else follows.
Well, we're forgetting that there's a match, so I'm going to take Gable and Benjamin winning, and I think that the continued split, for some reason, we're supposed to care that, you know, Zack Ryder is going to split with Mojo Rawley, so I'm going to say that continues, and I think maybe it comes to a head here, so I'm going to give the win to Gable and Benjamin.
I'd do the same thing.
Do you think anyone does care of a breakup between Ryder and...
Nobody cares, man.
U.S. title, AJ Styles. Well, it feels like I haven't seen him wrestle in years, against Baron Corbin. Okay, not a good sight with Baron Corbin not being able to get the job done against Ty Dillinger. I don't know if even AJ Styles can make Baron Corbin interesting right now. You said it. You were on point. I felt like he was making strides when we were talking Smack was around. Now, right now, whether it's true, the rumors of him pissing off, you know, the medical in the back about his, I guess, altercation with the concussion specialist, whether that's such a big deal that this has happened, something's going on with Baron Corbin. And right now, I do not see him even relative into anything going on in SmackDown storylines. This whole thing with AJ Styles is kind of weird. So I'm going to go AJ Styles winning. And Baron Corbin has fallen down solo in the last couple weeks.
It's not weird. It's just uninteresting. I see AJ Styles winning this one as well. And the thing with Baron Corbin is they've given him opportunities. Here's the thing. I don't think it's the last time he's going to be given opportunities. I'm sure this won't end. He will continue his rivalry with AJ Styles even after he loses and AJ retains the title. It's just basically Baron Corbin and everything he's done. I'm not going to critique how hard he's worked and how much he's put into it. But at the same time, it just doesn't work. He's uninteresting. Nobody appeals to him. Nobody's interested in him. Nobody's invested in him as a character. And when he does talk on the microphone, comes off as a jerk. That's great. Comes natural to him. But at the same time, that only gets you so far.
So we're going to see what happens. But we both pick AJ Styles. Yep. Now, Randy Orton and Rusev. This is where it's a toss-up, because, you know, Rusev maybe one day is going to get the one-up. So I'm going to say he gets the one-up here and beats Randy Orton. And it's so puzzling exactly where exactly they're going with Randy Orton. But I'm going to say Rusev comes out victorious in this matchup.
I think that might happen if Aiden English becomes a factor in this, and there's a weird partnership between him and
How
Rusev.
How crazy is that? But Aiden I'm English becomes a factor in anything.
I know, in anything. But he's got a great voice, though. I love him singing. No, I don't. I have Randy Orton win on this one, though. I just don't see it. Rusev getting any momentum at all, because I think right now they're just butchering his storylines.
Usos and the New Day. And this is highly anticipated for the tag team title SmackDown Live Hell in a Cell. It's not going to be all the New Day. It's going to be two of them. Two versus two. Your thoughts?
My thoughts are instinctively I'm picking the Usos in this one just because I think since early on before the New Day came over to SmackDown Live, they've established themselves as the most dominant team on SmackDown Live. I think they want to continue it, end this rivalry. And honestly, it might be towards the tail end where we could be talking down the road in a few weeks or maybe a few months from now that, you know, how much more does the New Day have left? You're talking about, you know, shtick running old with Breezango. You know, how much more can we keep doing New Day? What more do they have to accomplish? They've basically done everything as a faction.
Yeah, I agree. But I think that the fact that the company is hell-bent on having them break some kind of record where they win the most tag team titles, I think, in history.
Okay.
I think they want to flip-flop the title, so I'm going to go with the Usos too.
Yeah. Because we got to lose them first to gain them again. Yeah, exactly.
So I think we're in for a run. I don't know if by the end of this year, but mid-next year that the New Day is going to have those title belts on various occasions. So I'm going to go New Day as well.
Okay.
Women's SmackDown Championship. Natalya versus Charlotte. I think Natalya's championship brand has been a little bit underwhelming. I think Charlotte's face run has been underwhelming. It's like a bizarro. Like, what is going on? Charlotte needs to be a heel. They got her tagging with Becky Lynch. It's so-so. I'm just glad that she's wrestling again. I'm glad that everything with her father's been taken care of and he's doing better. But now you got Charlotte and Natalya for the SmackDown Women's Championship.
You know, for me, what made this rivalry so good initially when we first saw them compete for the first ever NXT Women's Championship in the tournament. Well, no, they didn't compete for the first ever one, but they competed for the NXT Championship. I stand corrected. That was Emma and Paige fought for the first ever NXT Women's Championship. It was opposites. Natalya was a face. Charlotte was the heel. This is an interesting dynamic. The only problem is that you're right. It's been a little bit underwhelming with Natalya's reign and obviously Charlotte kind of losing a lot of momentum coming to SmackDown Live when she first started here. I see Natalya still being victorious. I think right now they want to give her that ability. She's been the focal point of the women's division for a very, very long time. I think she could be a good anchor. And this could continue a good storyline and good rivalry going on. I don't think it's a one-off. I think far from over, Natalya retains it. But eventually in the end, I see Charlotte winning it. In the near future, but right now I got Natalya winning this one.
I do too. I just think the whole Carmella cashing that money in the bank, women's money in the bank, still looms, and I think that if they were going to pull it off somebody, it would be Natalya and not Charlotte, not have her win the title and then all of a sudden take it away from her. So I do think that there's a chance also that Carmella comes in and walks away with the women's championship here, but I'm going to say that if that doesn't happen still, I'm going to say that Natalya retains the SmackDown Women's Championship.
All right, so we're agreed on that one. We have Natalya retaining the title.
And then we get to the main, well, I don't know if it's the main event, but it is the WWE Championship on the line. Jinder Mahal and Shinsuke Nakamura. God damn, why they call him the artist. Makes no freaking sense.
I don't get it why either. They gave him this whole Michael Jackson thing, and you know that was there before in his days in New Japan, but they're calling him the artist.
Into the whole bullying. We've gotten into the whole racial slurs. We've gotten into the childish sophomoric humor. This whole thing with the hinder Jinder. We've gotten into Nakamura's been kind of, he still hasn't shown who he is. We've gotten all this leading up to this main event. Everyone thought that Nakamura was going to come out successful at SummerSlam and become the champion, where he should have taken the title from Jinder, because that would have actually led to a title change eventually down the road, which would have been great.
Yeah.
But now Jinder Mahal walks in. We know that the India tour is looming. They're already there. I think they're going to have some tours in December. I don't see where Shinsuke Nakamura comes out victorious. I love saying that. Victorious. I think that Jinder Mahal retains the championship.
I hate to agree with you, Jeff, but yeah, I kind of see the same thing. I wouldn't be surprised if they completely did a 180 and you saw Shinsuke win it. But again, it would be a lackluster victory. I see Jinder winning this right now. Everything is going against Shinsuke Nakamura at this point. And when you think, oh, well, how can they do that? Because Shinsuke's been bullied. He's been destroyed character-wise. He's been embarrassed. that's just the way WWE does things at times, and it makes no sense in the long term or in the short term. But right now, I just see it. They're continuing. They believe enough in Jinder Mahal to continue this.
So we are basically
the modern day Maharaja.
So we basically agree on most of the card. I love it. Okay. I love you for it.
All right.
But we are tied now. Well, I mean, we really don't have that many differences here on the card except the Randy Orton Rusev. I did that just because that was a toss up.
Yeah.
I knew we were probably going to disagree there. So we're left with now this deciding the Buffalo Wings. This will decide Buffalo Wings here. Or unless, which I think is the main event, Hell in a Cell, Shane McMahon, Kevin Owens. And now if I was going to tell you this about Shane McMahon, doesn't win matches, has a hell of an athleticism, probably puts on matches of the night, but again, doesn't win any matches, and he
puts
could,
his body through
and
the
he
ringer.
Could be a WWE Hall of Famer as a performer. Shane McMahon, how can you expect him? How do you think he's going to win this matchup in Hell in a Cell? I have Kevin Owens going all the way here, and I think Sami Zayn turns heel, and I think he costs Shane McMahon the victory.
You know, I think, you know, unfortunately, losing streaks will have to come to an end. I think Shane, in this scenario, it might happen because he has to win one. He has to. But no, I don't believe what I'm saying either, so I'm picking Kevin Owens in this one too. You think after everything Shane McMahon puts himself through that, you know, He's right on the edge of winning one of these types of matches, but I don't think so. I think right now, if Shane were to win, it would just completely deflate a lot of the momentum that Kevin Owens has built on himself and what he's done with the whole McMahon
family.
Is it
false count anywhere?
It's false count anywhere.
Yeah,
so that just opens up more of the dynamic that they're going to go outside the cage. It's going to happen. I don't know why you announced that. The go home show because
I'd rather
you want
do
to surprise
that. I'd rather do that than we get to the event and then they say and before they're like, wait a minute, you know how many times they've done
but
that.
To me, it doesn't make any sense why it would be false count anywhere unless you're going to incorporate Sami Zayn in this. All right, I get it, Jeff, but isn't the main purpose of Hell in a Cell the two are supposed to be in the cell? Now, with all the Hell in a Cells,
agreed,
they get
agreed
out, they go on the top
what's
of the cage.
What's the point of the cell?
So then, what's the point of the cell?
Unless they're going to do a big spot
so
where they're going to pin him on top.
Wanting to be locked in a cage with Kevin Owens is now saying false count anywhere.
Yeah.
It makes no sense to me.
Agreed, my friend.
Okay.
And the Buffalo Wings are going to be determined on Rusev and Randy Orton. Think about that. That's what they're going to be counting on. But
talk,
again,
talk
it's
about a wild card. Huh?
It's a win-win situation here. Yep. So we're going to see what happens. And that is your Hell in a Cell preview. We'll be back recapping it next week. But a couple of loose odds and ends. Shayna Baszler officially signs with WWE. Your thoughts real quick on this signing and what it's going to lead up to. Wink, wink.
Yeah, the wink, wink is obviously we know what it is, guys. But I think for the WWE right now, they see a lot in Shayna Baszler. She's shown a good amount of that tough exterior. I mean, I kind of compare it to a more talented Baron Corbin in terms of she's a badass and she's a legit MMA fighter. So, yeah, I see it. I mean, she pulls off that character very well. What she can do in the ring, I still have yet to see that. But again, as
you're
far as signing by
I
her.
Said better hair. God damn, that's funny.
Oh, boy. You're talking about something from her humor, Jeff. But, yeah, I just see it as a smart for the mere fact that they want to continue the storyline. And, you know, I do think Shayna Baszler has some talent. So in terms of character development, she's good in the ring. I still think she needs more work. But, again, time's on her side in this sense because WWE seems to be really invested into the four horsewomen of the MMA.
And congratulations goes out to Billy Corgan and our former guest, Dave Lagana, because from what we know now, it seems like the NWA sale is official, and Billy Corgan is getting back into the wrestling business. Now, listen, NWA, when you think about it, has a history, but it's also kind of something of the past. A lot of people think that it's dead, and it's time for now Billy Corgan and like Dave Lagana to try to resurrect this. So, you know, congratulations goes out to them. Hopefully they're successful because it's always good to have competition in this business.
Yes, I mean, he has the legacy, has the lineage there. But again, you want to create your own history. And I think with these two individuals here, like you just mentioned, I think they have a good opportunity to do that. Right now, it just depends if they can get enough momentum, enough eyes, enough ears to listen to it. I think they will, though. And it's just great because it's another way, an opportunity for people to kind of hone their craft in other places. It's a great time to be a wrestling fan, and you just need more places to hone your craft. And this scenario, I think it's just great. It's a win-win situation, just like the Buffalo Wings.
Exactly. And of course, which underground rumors are saying now that they have funding for season four? We were talking to Shane Strickland the last time, saying how it's been 15 months since they've actually taped something. That's going to be tough to get everybody back, but it seems like it's going to be on a lower budget. So, it's, you know, can they keep a lot of these high names, guys like Shane Strickland, Marty the Moth? Can they keep Katrina? Eva Lise, can they keep Melissa Santos, Brian Cage, can they keep Joy Ryan? That's going to be something interesting, but it looks like season four is a go. We're going to keep our fingers crossed because, man, we saw the Strickland and Dante Fox match. That was crazy. They go above and beyond. It is more of an adult wrestling show, so we'll see what happens, and it looks like Lucha Underground is coming back for season four.
That's exciting. I'm really happy for that. Maybe Lucha Underground, I hate to say this, maybe they've been a victim of their own success right now, where it's just, it's skyrocketed so much right now where I don't think a lot of people were expecting it to be as popular as it is. And now if they are going to go for a fourth season on a low budget, you just like to hope that if they can't bring everybody back, like the individuals you just mentioned, hopefully they can bring somewhat of a nucleus so it still feels and has that same vibe. But who knows? Maybe season four could be just like what we talked about with the NWA, a new revamped version of it.
Yeah, so we'll see. And again, all we want is success for every wrestling organization because it gives everyone a chance to hone their skill and, you know, have more competition and more work. So we're always for that. And now to close the show, a few announcements on the Jersey Wrecking Crew side. WrestlePro and Jersey Wrecking Crew have gone hand in hand, and now we go hand in hand for the rest of the year as we will take part in all Jersey events going forward till the end of the year. Jersey Wrecking Crew and High Spot Podcast and Pat Buck and WrestlePro will, you know, like I said, will take that walk all the way. Walk that out together till the end of the year because we're partners.
Woohoo!
I bought the consortium and that consortium was me. Woo!
And now the High Spot Podcast and WrestlePro are partners. Till the end of the year.
And then Pat Buck would be grabbing his ear going, whoa,
it's
you
like,
know.
What did I just hear? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, but we'll be there getting sounds and interviews from the rest of the year. So in New Jersey, there's a Rahway show, a Mattawan show, and a Creswell show. So we're going to look forward to being part of that. Excited about that.
Definitely excited about that. I mean, WrestlePro's done a great job of pointing out great cards out there. Every single one we've gone to, whether we've promoted or have gone there as fans, has been, you know, you got your money's worth out of it. And like I said, that goes, a lot of credit goes to Pat Buck, the creator, the promoter of WrestlePro, and everybody else that works there because they all work really hard. And all the interviews that we've posted for you guys, you've listened to, from behind the scenes to what the certain talent has done to get to the point they are now. A lot of it is, it's all family, and it feels that way too. And so when you see everybody helping each other out, it's just a great atmosphere to be around, not only with the talent, but with the fans of WrestlePro as well.
I mean, October 13th and 14th, one in Rahway, one in Brooklyn. You got Ted DiBiase, Al Snow, Spirit Squad, Joey Janela. They will be there on the 13th, and then you got a great show in Brooklyn as well. So, I mean, then they come back on the 21st. So, again, we'll preview that next week, but that's just great and amazing. And, of course, November 4th, Battle Club Pro from Ridgefield Park. We already have interviews set up for that as we lead into November 4th. So again, Jersey Wrecking Crew is trying to make a lot of announcements, and we'll have a couple more in the very near future. So man, we're just up to bigger and better things, and we are close.
Killing it, man. Killing
it. Episode 100.
Yes, and to me, that's more significant. I think we're about four more away, so maybe next week or the week after that, I'll get into a little more in depth because a long time ago, guys, I don't know if you listened to it, you can listen to past episodes, I was a little frustrated. I cut kind of like a pipe bomb type promo just because of my frustration. I think, you know, from where we are now to reaching 100, it's going to be very, for me at least, and maybe for you too, Jeff, because I'm sharing the show with you as well. Historic moment for us because we've reached 100, so it's always special. We'll have a special guest hopefully on that one as well, and we'll keep you guys posted who that might be. But just exciting because we've come this far from where it originally started to now, but we'll dive more into that. But I'm just looking forward to a definitely exciting moment.
I know, so many promises we've made, and we'll keep them for the 100th episode and going forward. You've been listening to the High Spot Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast, and also on all our social media outlets, on the Facebook page, on Instagram, on Snapchat. Find out who our guest next week is going to be. Go on there Wednesday and find out. Go on Highspot on Facebook.com/HighSpotPodcast and find out who our guest is next week. I think that's what we're going to do. I've been doing that the last couple weeks. I think it's a cool way for you guys to interact on the Facebook page, so definitely look out for who our guest is next week, and we'll like the surprise. And of course, follow and subscribe on iTunes. Leave a review. That's the only way we know we're doing a great job. We love to hear your feedback here on the High Spot Podcast and also on that brand spanking new website, highspotpodcast.com. And thank you to the Fans Podcast and also to Mark Adam Haggerty and Beat Plus Player Radio Network.
So for that, guys, you've been listening to the High Spot Podcast. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew for my tag team partner, Jeff Martin. I am the trendsetter, Brian Berger. You're welcome for that. Can't wait to talk to you guys next week.
No, you're welcome.
No, you're welcome. No, you're welcome. Stop it. And we can't wait to talk to you guys and have the show next week for you, because next week, Jeff's just going to be
too sweet.